direction. On your helpful guidance, our experts will not be taking you through their evidence in full. Grateful for that material to have been pre-circulated and as expected, the panel to have read all that. But those experts will be preparing or will be providing to you summary submissions, some less than more. Again, as you said, sir, where matters are slightly more contentious, you can anticipate those experts will provide you with more fulsome summaries. And finally, in relation to that condition set that came through the markup on Friday night, firstly, I just want to say we're really grateful to the council team for working on those over last week. Again, as you've said, sir, it's a big part of this iterative free-flow process with a matter of this scale, but it's actually very helpful to get that that indication and that markup. Our experts are thinking carefully about that, have been over the weekend, and again, we're going to meet again tonight as a team to work through that so that those experts can helpfully address you in relation to some of those changes. I think on that point, sir, though, there's still some more thinking to be done on those edits, and so again, that will be a little bit iterative this week, but we'll work with our experts to ensure that they can speak to you about those amendments or where they're sitting in relation to conditions, again, acknowledging your well-made point, sir, that when we speak to conditions, of course, we acknowledge that there's a whole week next week to hear from the community and submitters, and I think it's a very well-made point that we forget as users of this process as we dive into conditions and start wordsmithing, as some of us are apt to do, that in fact we'll also be listening very carefully next week and thinking very hard about what we hear from the community next week. I'm grateful for that invitation. Finally, again, you can tell I'm sort of not wanting to, I'm procrastinating on starting my legal submissions. You're all going to be on the edge of your seat for 51 odd pages. But I also just finally did want to really acknowledge CAF. Pulling together a process like this is no mean feat. You just look at the amount of data and trees around the place, and it's a huge job to pull it together, and she's been an absolute pleasure to work with and deal with, so we're very grateful for that. So we'll get into legal submissions if there's any, unless there's any questions on admin.
I just wanted to make one comment. I found it very helpful that the council had presented that iteration, because it could easily have been a situation of wait and see what the KiwiRail said and then come up with that. So it does front foot things helpfully, and I'm sure it was quite an exercise to get together. We are still trying to absorb the scope and implications of that too, so it's a joint process of discovery, and that's why I've invited experts to almost treat us as neophytes in terms of those conditions and explore them through their executive summaries.
Thank you, sir. I think, as you indicated, there are some matters certainly that I think the relevant experts are still a little bit far apart on, and you can probably see some of those themes emerging, and I'll certainly, Ms. Rapley and I will address you on those points, but equally too as a significant level of agreement and good work done there too. So as you mentioned, sir, in introducing this hearing this morning, we're here in relation to a notice of requirement lodged by KiwiRail for the construction and operation of a regional freight hub near Palmerston North. In my submission, this freight hub is a critical piece of regional and national infrastructure that will be a game changer for the region. It is required to meet the needs of future generations, and will respond to the real change in the demand for freight movements and the way freight is and should be handled going forward in New Zealand. In my submission, the hub is a sustainable transport solution that is necessary to meet changing freight demands for our country and to adapt to the changing environment. The delivery of the hub will have significant benefits for the region and for New Zealand Inc. The benefits are wide-ranging and include employment benefits, improvements to the safety of the transport network, and will enable an increase in the resilience of our regional and national freight systems. Kiwi Rail and Rail has long been a part of this community and the wider region. The proposed site was carefully selected following a robust assessments process, which we'll speak to in a bit. The site itself, as the panel will know, is largely rural at present, relatively undeveloped, and highly modified. Now, Kiwi Rail recognizes absolutely that a project of this nature and this scale will be a change for the community. There will be adverse effects associated with its construction and operation. Just on that, sir, as you will know, the project has attracted about 98 submissions. About 41 or so in opposition, but also a good amount either neutral or grant with conditions, and also a range of submitters in support of the project. Those submissions in opposition, when we think about those, relate to primarily amenity concerns, real concerns about how dust, noise, light, visual amenity will be managed. Some submitters also just frankly do not want the hub in this location, and we acknowledge and hear those concerns. In my submission, Kiwi Rail and its expert team has worked really hard to understand those concerns and look to manage or mitigate them through the suite of conditions proposed. I'd also at this point, and we'll discuss this further, and other witnesses will as well, acknowledge iwi and Manapenawa concerns and submissions raised in relation to the project. And again, you'll hear from Ms. Polson and others that Kiwi Rail is working hard to understand those cultural values and how to recognize and provide for them through this project. In my submission, the suite of evidence provided and the proposed conditions will ensure that this NOR satisfies the statutory test in 171 in particular. And in my submission, the panel should clearly recommend that the NOR be confirmed on the conditions proposed. And again, noting the submissions prepared Friday, the set of conditions that we were looking to here are attached to Ms. Bell's evidence, and again, an iterative process that we've discussed.
Just on that point, when we're asking questions, we will, at least in the legal and planning, subject to whatever the evidence is, we'll assume that currently Kiwi Rail are running with the set that Ms. Bell has produced rather than the other. So that's how we'll proceed in terms of questions.
At 110 of the subs, I set out the list of experts that you'll hear from today, an experienced and comprehensive suite of experts and corporate witnesses that you'll hear from over the next couple days. So section two of the legal submissions relates to the importance of the rail network, setting that scene for the importance and need of this regional freight hub project. Kiwi Rail's national railway network is an asset of national and regional importance. Rail is fundamental to the safe and efficient movement of people and freight throughout New Zealand. And you'll hear from Mr. Moyle, and it's in his evidence, that the importance of rail to the New Zealand economy is demonstrated by the significant volume of freight and passengers that the rail network carries every year. Heavy rail is critical infrastructure that has a fundamental role in New Zealand's supply chain. In order to enable it to operate the network and move freight efficiently and safely around the country, Kiwi Rail's network is comprised of the necessary infrastructure, including tracks, container terminals, and freight yards. The The use of rail for transporting and moving freight and passengers has a range of benefits, and again, these are canvassed in Mr. Moyle and Mr. Paling's evidence in particular, but those benefits include sustainability. Transporting a ton of freight by rail generates 70% fewer emissions than transporting that freight by road. Safety and well-being. Transporting more goods by rail has the benefit of enabling a reduction in the level of heavy vehicles on our roading network. Connectivity. The use of rail for the movement of freight provides critical connection between primary producers and ports. And rail is absolutely and fundamentally an integral part of the freight supply chain in New Zealand. Resilience. Rail provides an alternative method of transport for distributors and exporters, which can be a major benefit in relation to, in particular, congestion on the road network or in emergency situations when the roading network is disrupted. The evidence of Mr. Paling also talks to the benefits of rail for the economy, and they're significant. The importance and value of the rail network has been recognized by the government's investment in rail and acknowledged in a range of statutory documents, including the rail plan, which was updated again this year. In essence, KiwiRail's national rail line network is a vital element of New Zealand's infrastructure that is critical to the movement of freight and passengers throughout the country. So if we drop into this freight hub project, and at a high level, we start with Palmerston North's strategic role in the freight and transport network. Palmerston North is a key freight and transport hub. It plays a critical role in New Zealand's supply chain. Its role as a logistics hub is supported by its location and the fact that it is at a transport crossroads where state highways and rail corridors intersect. The Manawatu-Whanganui region is also an important producer of primary products, many of which are transported to critical ports by rail. Now, KiwiRail has been part of the Palmerston North community for a very long time. And in relation to recent European history, rail first came to Palmerston North in 1886, passing through town until the Milson deviation of the NIMT opened in 59. KiwiRail currently operates, as the panel will know, an existing freight yard on Tremaine Ave, which is an important part of that logistics chain in the Palmerston North area and the Lower North Island. Now, Mr. Paling's evidence explains that existing freight traffic through Tremaine Ave and identifies that freight traffic in the region is expected to grow substantially by 2050. He also notes that those projections in his evidence do not take into account the potential for a greater share of goods to be transported by rail as a result of modal shift. So there's a potential for even higher growth than projected. Now, in relation to KiwiRail's current facilities, Tremaine Ave began opening in about 63, the current facilities are old and fragmented. Over time, residential and other urban development has intensified around the existing rail yard, and you can see that very clearly when driving around the Tremaine Ave site. It is absolutely constrained by significant levels of urban development as town has come to Tremaine Ave. As a result, the existing freight yard is constrained in its ability to expand and to accommodate this future expected demand in an efficient manner. So following an analysis of a range of options, KiwiRail considered that it needed to develop a new intermodal freight hub near Palmy to efficiently accommodate freight growth over time. The strategic location of Palmerston North for the movement of freight means that improved facilities in this location genuinely have a critical role to play in improving the supply chain and enhancing economic development in the region. So the government granted KiwiRail funding to plan for a new intermodal freight hub through the Provincial Growth Fund in 2019, and that funding really was the catalyst for the development of a master plan for the freight hub. KiwiRail developed that master plan, which again, as the panel will know, is a common tool when thinking about development for major infrastructure providers. That master plan thought about the development of intermodal freight hubs in New Zealand. It was intended to bring together operational requirements, key operational requirements, with spatial requirements to guide the development of hubs around the country. That master plan was used by KiwiRail to identify an appropriate location for the hub along the NIMT. And we'll talk about the assessment of alternatives in a minute, and that's also canvassed in the evidence of some of the KiwiRail experts. Now, in terms of the key components of a freight hub, and we acknowledge, again, as you indicated, Sir, at the start, this is a significant project of scale. Now, Mr. Moyle's evidence explains that the freight hub is underpinned by this concept of hubbing, which involves locating rail tracks with critical freight handling and storage facilities to improve the efficient movement of rail, of freight by rail, pardon me. So the hub is composed of these key components: facilities for marshalling of trains, maintenance facilities for locomotive and wagon maintenance, rail operation and train control centers, container terminals, which enable simultaneous loading of containers, rail serviced freight forwarding and distribution facilities, and specialty rail, like log handling and bulk liquid storage facilities. The freight hub also includes the necessary supporting infrastructure to enable the transfer of freight to and from road and rail, as well as the required and necessary stormwater management facilities. So as explained in Mr. Skelton's evidence, each of these elements of the hub have been carefully considered through this concept design phase to have regard to KiwiRail's key operational requirements, as well as measures to avoid, remedy, or mitigate adverse effects. In my submission, the proposal before you in relation to the freight hub and the concept plan includes a comprehensive effects management package, including around, in particular, substantial noise and visual mitigation measures. And the relevant experts will speak to you in detail about that. Now, the hub necessarily needs to have a long-term planning horizon to it. Improved facilities for the marshalling of trains will enable the introduction of trains of up to 1,500 meters in length, as well as expanded freight handling facilities to continue to provide and improve on the effective transfer of goods between road and rail. And as you will have seen in the evidence, the intention here is a staged out development of the hub, and Mr. Skelton's evidence in particular steps through the stages of the development of the freight hub. The entire thing will not be delivered, as you would expect for an infrastructure project of this kind, on day one.
Just on that point, I'd be interested to hear from the experts in terms of some things like stormwater treatment and so forth. While I appreciate the staging will occur in terms of the major above ground features of the site, it wouldn't make a lot of sense to do other parts other than completely at the start. So I'm just curious how much of the components, I guess, below ground or whatever are the infrastructure that would be necessary to support the overall development will be delivered at the first stage, if you like, or how that would work.
Before we move to the nitty-gritty legal elements, I'd acknowledge as well that in developing and refining the freight hub proposal and considering sites and the like, KiwiRail has worked with key stakeholders and been involved in an ongoing discussion with the wider community. Ms. Paulson addresses this in her evidence and will speak to you about that. QREL has sought to undertake a multifaceted approach to engagement. And we're here today reflecting on that, but also in terms of the go-forward QREL, and you'll hear this from Mr. Moyle and Ms. Polson in particular, is committed to continuing to work with the community through the life of this project. So we turn to now the elements of the NOR and the approvals sought. I will not seek to read statutory provisions
That's
to you.
Fine.
Panels really enjoy that. This is in relation, this first part of the detailed legal submissions is in relation to the scope matter that some submitters have raised. That is the scope of QREL's ability to designate land for some of the activities that are proposed within the freight hub. So as the panel will know, to give to lawfully give notice of an NOR under the RMA, the following limbs must be satisfied. The freight hub needs to be a project or a work. QREL has to give notice in the prescribed form, and the freight hub is within the scope of QREL's approval as requiring authority. So the issue here, sir, as you'll be aware, is a challenge or questions raised around the scope of QREL's requiring authority status, as opposed to, in some instances, or in some cases, you might see a question or challenge around the scope of the designation itself. This is a query around QREL's requiring authority status and scope.
Yep.
There's clearly no dispute about the first two limbs of that test, and this is very much around the scope of QREL's approval. So under Section 1673, the Minister for the Environment can approve network utility operators as requiring authorities by gazette notice for the purposes of a particular network utility operation. The Act defines a network utility operator as including, and there's a range of things, but of relevance here, a person who constructs, operates, or proposes to construct or operate a road or railway line. So QREL applied to become a requiring authority in November 2012. The application that QREL provided to the minister sought approval for the construction operation and proposed construction and operation of any railway line currently owned by NZRC and future railway line to be part of that network, and then went on to say NZRC owns 4,000 k's of track, has rights to use 18,000 hectares of land from December 2012. Because you remember, this is around this new change in ownership of some assets that occurred in 2012. The QREL Holdings Limited Group will own the tracks and all other railway infrastructure assets, have the right to use the underlying land. It will become responsible for the nationwide operation, construction, maintenance, improvement, replacement, and extension of the existing and future railway system, including lines, rail yards, station precincts, and off-rail sites, and route protection corridors. The application also provided that on a day-to-day basis, the works need to be undertaken by QREL to enhance the bulk of QREL's infrastructure. This work can range from works to provide for track slews and realignments, maintenance and upgrading, to provide facilities for modal transfer, yards and sidings. So the application documents that QREL submitted to the minister. The application is in the bundle included in the bundle of authorities, but I've set out the relevant sections there. And on the basis of that application, the minister approved QREL as a requiring authority by gazette notice in March 2013. The gazette notice provides approval as a requiring authority. QREL Holdings Limited is hereby approved under 167 for its network utility operation, being the construction, operation, maintenance, replacement, upgrading, improvement, and extension of its railway line. And noting again that the relevant section in 167 notes a network utility operator as someone who may construct, operate, etc., a railway line. So the scope of QREL's powers as a requiring authority stem from the gazette notice. That Gazette notice was approved by the minister on the basis of KiwiRail's application. In approving or requiring authority, the minister must be satisfied that the approval is appropriate for the purposes of carrying out the network utility operation, and that the applicant is likely to satisfactorily carry out all responsibilities, including financial responsibilities, of a requiring authority under the RMA. KiwiRail has and accepts financial responsibility for its network utility operation and the designations it holds, and it holds numerous designations for those purposes. It's the existence of the financial responsibility that is important, and the minister, in approving KiwiRail as a requiring authority, accepted that KiwiRail had the necessary responsibilities, which include responsibilities for all works necessary for the operation of its railway network. Now, one of the issues that appears to have vexed some of the submitters is this term railway line. Railway line is not defined in the RMA, some submitters have contended that that term should be given a narrow interpretation as relating to the definition of railway line in the Railways Act 2005, and I've set that full definition out in the footnotes. My submission is that that is not correct. Section 166 of the Act does not refer to a definition of railway line in the Railways Act or any other legislation, and it never has. It's never cross-referred to another piece of legislation to clarify that definition. And that's despite that happening with other definitions. So the definition of network utility operator contains references to various other statutes and their corresponding definitions. So, for example, again, this is in footnote 31, there's a cross-reference to the definition of electricity operator or electricity distributor. There's also a cross-reference to airport authorities, to the Airport Authorities Act. That's not the case as it relates to railway line. Now, in my submission, the absence of a cross-reference or refined or narrowed definition of railway line in the RMA was deliberate, and we have to presume that it was, given that the New Zealand Railways Corporation Act 1981, which was in force at the time the RMA was promulgated, did contain a definition of railway line. So it was entirely open to Parliament at that time to cross-refer to a definition of railway line, but it chose not to. Now, under Section 167 of the RMA, the Minister has broad powers to grant requiring authority status to a network utility operator on such terms and conditions as she or he sees fit. Despite those broad powers, the minister in this case did not limit the definition of railway line in the Gazette notice to a definition in the Railways Act. This is also despite it being common for Gazette notices for requiring authorities to refer to specific legislative definitions. And again, I give an example there, Queenstown Airport Corporation's Gazette notice, which cross-refers to a definition of airport in the Airport Authorities Act. In my submission, the phrase railway line in the Gazette notice should be interpreted in light of the preceding text in the Gazette notice, which includes the operation as well as the improvement and expansion of the railway line. Because railway lines exist for the transit of freight and passengers, the marshalling of trains as well as the loading, transit, unloading of freight and passengers are all clearly necessary for the operation of the railway line. The express reference in the Gazette notice to upgrading, improvement, and expansion also clearly envisages that KiwiRail can undertake works to alter or change its railway corridor in my submission, the activities that are necessary for its operation. Without rail infrastructure like yards, container terminals, freight loading and unloading facilities, KiwiRail would not be able to operate its railway line. In my submission, it would be an unduly and unreasonable narrow approach to interpret KiwiRail's requiring authority powers as being confined in a very narrow way to simply mean KiwiRail can only ever operate or give notice of works relating to track. Now that interpretation, the interpretation I'm positing here, is consistent with the legislative purpose of the Act of the RMA and allowing network utility operators to become requiring authorities. That purpose is to allow entities to carry out works via a designation process that are generally services, and so you alluded to this in your introductory comments around sort of the weight and importance of requiring authorities, designations, and NORs. Services which are generally considered public in nature or essential to a functioning society, things like the supply of water, electricity, airports, road and rail. So in my submission, taking a purposive approach, it is appropriate and necessary for requiring authorities to have the ability to designate land for works that are necessary to achieve their approved functions. It would be bizarre if they had those broad powers and those approved functions, but were then narrowly confined in terms of what notices of works they could promulgate. So in the context of the rail corridor, this would clearly include infrastructure and activities to support the movement of freight and passengers on railway tracks. In my submission, sir, the position in relation to KiwiRail's requiring authority status is clear and appropriately broad, and in no way should be read down to mean that KiwiRail could only ever issue notices of works for railway track. I'd also note then, when we look to the hub proposal, the freight hub proposal in the NOR, all the activities within the freight hub are and will be directly serviced by rail. These activities are all necessary and integral to the operation of the rail corridor. Without them, KiwiRail's railway could not be used as intended, which is a method to transport freight. The nature of the activities that are proposed to be authorized and sought to be authorized through this NOR are not unique to this application either. They're common activities that are undertaken at KiwiRail yards throughout the country. And this is reflected in other designations that are held by KiwiRail around the country. In my submission, the freight hub is very clearly within the scope of KiwiRail's powers as a requiring authority to designate land for the operation of its railway line. Turning then to the designation process itself, as the panel will know, the process sets under the RMA sets an important framework for the assessment of an NOR and the effects on the environment. And the designation process is twofold. First, the requiring authority gives notice of an NOR to the relevant district council. And in my submission, it's very common at this stage for the NOR to be prepared on the basis of a preliminary design because detailed design has not been undertaken. As the Environment Court has noted, many cases before the court are prepared on the basis that the final design is not known. But the Act also enables then that second step of refinement and testing of effects for an NOR. Once a designation is confirmed, the details of the proposed work are then provided to the District Council through an outline plan. And outline plans, as the panel know, must show such details, height, shape, and bulk of the works, likely finished contour, location and sites of the works, landscaping proposed, etc. So in my submission, that two-stage designation process is a critical distinction between an NOR and a resource consent application. I raise these points, sir, because as you would have seen in some of the Section 42A material, and indeed in some of the matters of concern for submitters, there's this tension or querying around the level of information that QRL and its experts have provided at this stage? Is it enough? And some of the criticism is, as you would have read through submissions and some of the 42A work, is it's not enough. We need more detail. We need further management plan conditions or further assessment of effects. In my submission, the NOR process that we're engaged in now is recognizing that for an NOR, which is, as you've said, sir, in the introductory comments, a unique and slightly different approach to a standard resource consent application, recognizes that a number of features may be subject to change at a detailed design phase, and the NOR phase is not the only opportunity for the effects of a designation to be considered by the District Council. In my submission, that outline plan mechanism is an important mechanism in the Act and provides an appropriate vehicle to further understand and address effects once detailed design has been undertaken.
Right, well, that might be a convenient time just to break. We'll stick to the 11 schedule. We'll come back at 11:20.
Thank you, sir.
And I think you're at other approvals, paragraph 425.
Yes, sir.